Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, hello, listeners. Glad to be in the studio today because I have a special guest with me. My husband, Jim Lorenz, is with me. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jill. This is great.
I know. I'm so glad to have you back on the show. You always give us a lot of great information about not only how we manage situations, but when we need to call the police, why should we ever involve the police? And that's what you do for a living. So tell my listeners what you do.
Well, I'm a division chief for the Wheat Ridge Police Department. Wheat Ridge is a small town on the west side of, we share a boundary with Denver, Colorado. So we're in the metro area, and I do a lot of different things there, but one of the things that I do is I teach classes to first responders, police and fire, regarding responding to people with dementia, calls for service of involving people with dementia, and how to handle those kinds of calls more effectively.
Okay. Well, let me give you a couple of examples of things that my listeners are concerned about that maybe you can shed some light on today, okay?
All right.
So one of the first one is that now we're in February, but the holidays have come and gone. People went back to their hometowns, visited loved ones. Now we've gotten through January where the skies are gray. People are a little more moody. Their disposition has changed throughout the holidays. And they start really saying, what did I see at my parents' house or my aunt's house or what have you? I think my aunt might be neglected by the people who are supposed to be caring for her. So what kind of things would constitute neglect? When would somebody need to call the police if they were concerned about their loved one being neglected?
Well, you'd certainly want to call whenever there's a danger to a person or others. So if that loved one is in a situation where they're not safe, where they're not cared for properly, if you're seeing hygiene issues, safety issues, filthy conditions, dangerous kinds of things that are in the home that people don't seem to be keeping track of, it's always a good time to call immediately when there's danger to a person or others. Aside from that, if you're just noticing things that seem not quite right, maybe dirty conditions or hoarding kind of situations that are not necessarily an emergency, then those are things that you could talk to the police about. We can work with other partners and resources to try to figure out if there's ways that we can help people that way.
Okay, I love that. All right, another thing that comes up is wandering. Now, I work with lots of people with Alzheimer's and Lewy body and even Parkinson's, our friends with Parkinson's that have memory loss. And the reasons people wander are many. Some is they're looking for someone. They're trying to go to work. They're feeling like they need to be somewhere. But when they wander, that's a serious issue. And they should call the police if that person has been missing for an hour or better. Right?
Well, so the statistics are that if a person with dementia is not found within 24 hours, then their chance of suffering serious injury or death is 50%. So we want to find people as quickly as possible. In Colorado, of course, we have a kind of climate that's really dangerous for people to be out outside, and of course that's true in various parts of the country and the world. So we want to make sure that we find people as quickly as possible.
I wanted to share something with listeners. No matter where you are, there is a program. It's got a lot of different names, Project Lifesaver, Care Track, depending on where you are. Here in Colorado, we call it Colorado Life Track, but it is actually a radio transmission. The person will wear a device that looks like a watch, but it emits a signal. And that signal can go to a device that the police have, your department has, and if they are registered for your program and they are changing their batteries regularly, you would be able to possibly locate that person a little bit quicker, right?
Right. So those are radio devices. You've got a basic transmitter and a basic receiver so that when someone is missing, that we can break out the receiver and locate a person. It's a good program. It's a free program in most jurisdictions. Most jurisdictions all over the country and probably places in the world have access to this kind of service that the police could provide. And then it gives us also a chance for, we have, in our particular department, we have a group of volunteers that goes out to change batteries, and it gives them a chance to talk to people and get to know them. It's another outreach kind of situation for our department to participate in.
And it's also good for children with autism and so forth, but you must be registered with your local police department, right?
Yeah, you just call your local PD and see if they have that service available, and I'm sure they could hook you up with it.
Okay, and let's delve into this just a little bit more. When people wander, sometimes they're just hiding, aren't they? Can that be?
Yeah, certainly one of the things we know is that people with dementia live in a world of fear. They get scared easily. They're confused. They don't understand what's going on. And just like anybody else, when you get confused, when you don't know what's going on, you get scared. And when you get scared, probably the best thing for you to do is to hide, to be quiet, and not bring any attention to yourself. That is why when people with dementia do wander, they say that statistically only about 1% will respond to a searcher calling out their name, mm-hmm. because that's just scary to them.
Right. So, folks, look all over your house. Look in closets. Look under beds. Look in sheds, storage units, your attic, your basement, any place that they might hide, because you can look and look again and look again, and on the third time, you might actually find them. So it's important to do that, and the police department will sure do that if you call them and you need some help. So don't wait when a person has wandered away and you feel like you might not be able to find them. Okay, another subject I wanted to tackle is it is true of some of our folks with cognitive impairment that they can become combative. And when that happens, folks, I want you to use some redirection skills. I want you to try to de-escalate a situation. Try to lower the stimulation levels in the house. Turn the lights down. Lower your tone of voice. Breathe in for 4 seconds. Breathe out for 4 seconds. Lower your heart rate and your energy so that maybe you can calm the person down if they are angry and you can't seem to get a handle on it. If that happens, though, sometimes they need to call the police. Well, Jim, we don't want people going to jail when there's an issue. When they call the police and the dispatcher answers, what's the best thing to say to that dispatcher so that the officer knows what he's getting into when he takes that call?
Yeah, when you talk about you explain the entire situation as best you can as to what's going on, and it probably starts out with, my loved one has a diagnosis of dementia, and if you know the particular type of dementia that they suffer from, it would be good to know that information also. So as much information as you can give is always helpful to the police.
Mm-hmm. And let them know that it's just a de-escalation situation that they need help with?
Right, because in Colorado and most states, all states and probably other areas in the world, there are laws regarding domestic violence. So if there is a couple that lives together and a crime is committed, regardless of what type of crime that is, it may be designated as domestic violence. And in most states, a person has to be jailed on such a charge.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with dementia is that a person is probably not culpable. They probably don't understand what is occurring. They probably don't know right from wrong at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as law enforcement and as you know, the community, we don't want to charge people with crimes when they are not culpable. So we work with our district attorney's office and we develop standards on how to determine if a person is culpable or not. And it starts with a medical evaluation. So we might have a person go into the hospital and they might have a little exam to make that determination. There might be paperwork that states that they have a type of dementia, or we can get in touch with their doctors and get more information on that. One of the worst things that we can do is put someone in jail that has dementia. It just makes them more confused, more anxious, and very terrifying for them.
Mm-hmm. So when you're actually on that call, it's good to keep your distance from that person if they're agitated, right?
Well, and this is what we teach police officers to do is in de-escalation techniques. For the most part, and this certainly doesn't always hold true, but a person with dementia is often not physically capable of hurting a police officer. Now, you never know, and we always want to protect ourselves, but the best way to protect ourselves is to keep a good distance. So stay out of arm's reach. Stay out of the way. Try to continue to talk to a person. If you can put some kind of barrier between you and that person, maybe a chair or that you can be behind that gives you some distance and allows you the opportunity to talk to a person, try to calm them down, and work that way is always best.
I totally agree. And just using a calm tone of voice and really not trying to be that big imposing person, but kind of making yourself more accessible and a little bit smaller. Do you know what I mean by that?
Sure. And, you know, we always think about that. And of course, I always kid the firefighters because they always come in a group.
And
yeah. You get 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 17 people in uniforms and looking very terrifying, and that can be scary. So limiting the number of people helps quite a bit if you can limit that to just 1 or 2 and everybody keep their distance, continue to talk in low, calm voices, changing the subject, talking about other things that might help calm a person down.
Right. And if they say something incorrect, please don't correct them. That's one of the biggest issues that I see when I hear complaints about maybe EMTs and fire and police coming in. They come in sort of with the guns blazing kind of thing, and it can be very terrifying for people with Alzheimer's and different types of dementia. When we come back, we're going to talk about firearms, disposing of firearms when somebody has cognitive impairment, and driving issues. Oh, my goodness, driving issues. It's a privilege. Not a right, folks. We'll be back after 70 seconds with a lot more information.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and their effects on the people we love.
Okay, I'm back, and I have my husband, Jim Lorenz, with me today on the show. And Jim is a division chief at Wheat Ridge, Colorado Police Department. And so, Jim, sometimes people are afraid to call the police because they think they might get in trouble if someone's wandering. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, that's not uncommon at all. A lot of times people feel, caregivers may feel, that the police are going to judge them. They're going to think that they're not taking good care of this person, that they may charge them with a crime. And what we want to do is really encourage people to call us as soon as possible. People that wander, people that have dementia and wander, the statistics are that if a person is gone for 24 hours, they will be either, they have a 50% chance of either being seriously injured or dying. And a lot of times that's just due to exposure and not being found quick enough.
Right.
So if we can, a lot of times people may wait a couple hours and they may try to look themselves and just thinking that, well, we can find them and then we'll leave the police out of this. And it's always a good idea to call as quickly as possible and we can find that person and keep them safe.
Right. And they hide in places in your houses, too, in closets, under beds, in attics and things like that. So always check and double check and triple check, right?
Because yeah, exactly. That's the one of the first things that we do is go through the location. We'll see that with care facilities a lot of times that they think that a person has left the facility and they're somewhere hiding inside, so we want to make sure we do a thorough check before we start, you know, combing the highways for someone.
Right. Speaking of highways, let's talk about driving. Wow, is that ever an issue for people? So, as a matter of fact, I just had an assessment yesterday, and in this assessment, the person had driven their car and wrecked it 3 times within 3 weeks. And then, because of their dementia and their cognitive impairment, they have purchased 3 cars in 3 weeks after each one of these accidents. Yesterday, I suggested that they take those car keys away and get rid of the car that is still there right now. But this is a big issue, right? People driving with dementia, with Alzheimer's, with Parkinson's, whatever it is.
It happens pretty frequently. And if you think about how long a person can have the disease, maybe even before diagnosis, sometimes people can have the disease for several years.
Right.
So it's not uncommon for people to be driving maybe undiagnosed or shortly after diagnosis. So there are ways that, you know, you can get the person to a doctor and a doctor can do an examination and evaluation to determine, is this person able to drive? The Department of Motor Vehicles can do tests. There are private facilities that do testing in driving simulators to see if a person is able to drive. So I would say just because you have a diagnosis of dementia does not mean that you have to stop driving right away. there can be a period of time where a person is still able to drive, but you have to stay on that, you know, pay attention to that very closely. But there comes a time when a person should not be driving clearly. They get lost. They're confused. They
cause accidents.
They cause accidents. They violate laws, and it can be dangerous for them and for the public. So as law enforcement, we really want to make sure that people that shouldn't be driving aren't driving.
Right. Well, I think, you know, families think, well, gosh, I don't want this person to lose their independence. But people, seriously, driving is a privilege. It's not a right. And if your loved one is causing accidents, is driving inappropriately, has poor reaction times, not looking over their shoulder to see if there's people in the lanes beside them, not stopping quickly enough, really try to appropriately determine whether or not they are safe. And if they are not, you should know that if they get in an accident and someone gets injured or, heaven forbid, killed, the family could be held responsible from the insurance company because they knew the person had some type of cognitive impairment and did not get them off the road. You can be held liable. So if that doesn't help you to make that decision and have that tough conversation with your loved one, I don't know what will. It's a tough subject.
Yeah, often what we see is very often an older male in the family.
Right.
And men have this concept that they're the head of the family. They have to drive. They get very stubborn about that. They don't want to be told that they can't drive.
Right.
You know, men don't want to ask for directions. They want
to. Right.
They want to be independent and they want to drive. So
yes.
When they're told.
Yes, ladies, we know this.
So when they're told that you're not able to drive anymore, there can be a lot of resistance. There can be anger. There can be a lot of drama in the house. So there are counseling sessions that can be done to talk to a person about giving up that driver's license when it is time. Go through the testing process and be evaluated, and hopefully we can convince them that when it is a good time to give up that driver's license.
I have a question for you, something I think about often. And unfortunately, I do recommend this to people, so I hope I'm not off base. But is it a smart idea if you have a loved one who has severe cognitive impairment, one of these types of dementias that we mention often, is it a good idea to take a picture of that person and let your local police department know in a non-emergency situation what they look like and what the situation is in case they ever have to respond to a call?
Well, I don't know if you need to give it, you know, give pictures to the police, you know, before something happens. But if you have a recent photo on your cell phone that you can show that you can email to an officer when someone's missing, of course, that's the best thing that you can have. There are some people that I know that take a picture every day of their loved one, and that way they have them in the clothing that they're wearing.
Right.
And then if they turn up missing, then they have a picture there. If they're prone to wandering, it's always good to be prepared for that, and then they can, I don't know, put it in a photo album or erase it or, you know, take another one tomorrow. So it's always a great idea to have a most recent picture.
There you go. All right, last tough subject, but this is a big one, firearms in the home. You know, people come to visit their loved ones and know that they have firearms, especially if they are prone to agitation. How would you recommend to a family to discuss removing the firearms from the home?
Yeah,
or would you?
You can just imagine the tragedy that can occur. A person with dementia that's, let's say they're sleeping soundly in the middle of the night, they hear a noise, they wake up, they grab their gun from the nightstand and they go to investigate, and they don't have the cognitive ability to understand exactly what's going on. And a family member, a neighbor, you know, all a child, all kinds of tragedies can occur. So we obviously don't want people to possess firearms if they have a cognitive impairment, if they have a diagnosis of some type of dementia. It's crazy dangerous for that to occur.
You know, we were on a local news station. You were actually not me, but one of my clients was on with you talking about removing the firearms from her dad's home, and it was like pulling teeth.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people are very they treat their guns very reverently, older males, they have that kind of idea that I've got to drive, I have to have a gun, and that's not really the issue. The issue is whether or not they have the cognitive ability to handle that and make good decisions, because you're talking about very dangerous things. So we recommend that you work with people, convince them that it's time, that these guns need to be locked up for everyone's safety. Locked up without access. You can have firearms disabled. You can make sure that there's no ammunition around. There's a lot of different things, and probably the best thing is just to remove them from the house so that they're not around. We also encourage people to employ that little white lie kind of thing for people with dementia, which is, the person asks, "Where's my guns?" And the caregiver would say, "Oh, I loaned them to your nephew. He's going hunting, and he'll bring them back next week." So that we just kind of dismiss that issue right now for the time being, and make sure that they're locked up or out of the house.
Okay. Yeah, these are just big, big issues that people go through every day. And folks, it's not lost on me. I talk to families day in and day out who tell me that the situation with their loved one is difficult, and there is agitation, and there's various issues that are going on, and you need a break. My Caregiver Nation, you need a break. Make sure you have someone who can come in and spell you for a little bit and spend some time with that person. Make sure that you're looking at all of the rec centers, senior rec centers, and opportunities for them to be engaged in some activities that are meaningful to them. Have a friend come over and spend some good time with them. Take them for a walk, watch a football game, whatever it is, so you can get a little time away, because the last thing we want is to have everybody in Caregiver Nation getting really frustrated with their loved one, and energy gets real negative, and it can happen. It absolutely can happen. I always try to talk about very positive things, but throughout the year, I hear a lot of stories about this, and this is where people get left in airports because their loved ones can't take care of them anymore. They get very afraid of them. So if any of this has helped you today, I really hope that it's made a difference. Jim, I'm glad to have you on here. It's always wonderful to have you back on the show, because you can really say things in a way people understand, and I appreciate that.
Well, it's always fun, of course, doing a show with you, Jill.
All righty, folks. Well, I hope you've learned something new today. I'll be back next week with some ideas about early stage Alzheimer's and what do you see, and maybe even just memory loss in general. What happens when a person is struggling with cognitive impairment? I'm going to talk to you all about it. It'll be a strategy show. So I look forward to having you on every week. Please let me know if there's something you want me to discuss. You can simply go to my website, summitresiliencetraining.com, and send me an email or give me a call. I'll be happy to talk to you about whatever it is that's going on. All right, folks, I'll see you next week. Take care.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.